You can be forgiven for thinking wine grapes are Oregon's top agricultural product because any trip through the countryside invariably takes you past a bunch of vineyards. But actually, by dollars, wine grapes are something like number 7 on the list of agricultural products. The wine industry overall does contribute more than $3 billion to Oregon's economy annually. That's the present. What's the future? People who work in and care about the industry gather next week for the annual Oregon Wine Symposium. Our next guest will be one of the speakers. Rob McMillan is the founder and executive vice president of Silicon Valley Bank. He recently compiled a report that indicates Oregon's wine industry might be in a better position than the industry in neighboring states. Rob, welcome to The Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So there's a whole wine division at the Silicon Valley Bank, is that right?
There is. It was an idea I had back in the early 90s, and it turned out to be a good one.
So just to finance wine industry needs?
That's all we do. We have about 475 wineries that we support.
Wow. So that really puts you in a position to observe all kinds of comings and goings in the wine industry.
That's all we do. When you focus on one thing, you better figure it out.
That's a good rule of thumb there. So how did you compile the report? There's a lot of stuff in here, but what did it take to put it all together?
Well, 40 years of experience in the business, plus the contacts with numerous data managers. And the reality is the wine industry is a private business. There's not a lot of public companies, so finding public data is difficult. But as a banker, I actually get financial statements. So, you know, when you go to the winery neighbor next door and you say, how are things going? And he always says the same thing, which is, it's great.
But, you know the truth, though.
Well, explain the red ink in the bottom then. Uh-huh. You know? So I have a unique perspective that gives me an opportunity to contribute to the wealth of knowledge that's out there, and have done this report now, which is free for anybody that wants to look at it. You can download it, and it's normally it's pretty easily read as far as reports go. Mm-hmm. It gets a lot of worldwide attention.
It is well written. I'll have to give you that. It's quite clear to be able to get through it. It is available online in PDF form. We are linked to it at our website at jeffexchange.org. It appears to be a combination of hard numbers and some surveyed moods of people in the business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the survey component ends up being important. You got to look at the qualitative. And although I talk to a lot of people and you know, many of our clients and prospects that I visit throughout the year, being able to get good survey information has been very helpful in trying to figure out what the numbers really say. So, and it changes year to year in terms of what's important. But the survey, we get roughly 10 to 13% of the industry to participate nationwide, mm-hmm. Which is pretty significant from a statistical standpoint.
So as far as surveying the moods of people in the business, do the moods depend on where people live and work? It seems to be a bit of a geographical scatter this year.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, Napa for a long time where I live has been, the centerpiece of American winemaking. It's certainly on the premium side. And, you know, having worked up in the Oregon market since the middle 90s, I don't think there's a person that would have said back then, one of these days Oregon is going to be the darling of the U.S. wine business. But, you know, that's what we have right now. And so folks in Oregon rightly are pretty happy about results. They're selling their wine and getting some small price increases along the way, and they're selling more each year too. So that's not the same environment that we see elsewhere in the wine industry right now.
That's a lofty title, the darling of the Oregon of the U.S. wine industry. What makes it so?
Well, part of it, it's the tallest tree in a short forest. right now, the Oregon wine market is looking at something around 13% growth rate, annual growth rate in sales. And when you look at the wine industry as a whole, it's more flat. And on a volume component, it's actually declining a bit. So it's difficult for growers in particular in California, let's say, just singling California out. When you lose volume, then that means you're probably going to have to pull out vineyards, which is the opposite thing in Oregon. They're still putting vineyards in, and they're dealing with that growth. So that's a cool thing for them.
Rob McMillan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the founder and executive vice president of Silicon Valley Bank, who, as he pointed out already, serves 475 different wineries across the country. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about the quality of the business and how it's going in Oregon and its neighboring states. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You do get right to the point early in the report. Yes, we are at a point of oversupply in the business cycle. So with all the new wineries coming on in recent years, that's not a surprise, is it?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it is. Not to me. It's something that I've been warning of in the last 3 years. And we are an industry of eternal optimists and artists, and it's a strange hodgepodge of it seems like almost hippie hippie-like people in our industry that just walk around, you know, whistling. And so, you know, some of my predictions haven't been all that well received in the last couple of years. And at this point now, I think folks recognize it. But it's not so much trying to get attention of anybody with any sort of predictions that I do, but it's trying to rightly give the industry some sort of a North Star to chart by. We're a long-term industry. You got to plant 5 years before you need it. It takes 5 years to get a fully mature yield. So, you know, that planning has to start a long way out. And that's one of the things that I try to do in the report. So it's not a surprise to me, but I think the industry is woken up now to the issues that befall us. And it has to do with an evolving consumer.
Well, this is an interesting point because, as you point out, it's not just an oversupply issue. You say also that that wineries are missing the mark on consumer expectations. So give us a sample of what those expectations are and how they're being missed.
Well, the what drove consumption of wine really in the past 25 years has been the boomer generation. And, you know, when the boomers came on hard in about 1994 and the wine industry started to grow, it was a very different animal. There were fewer. You know, you could still find Napa Valley wines. Actually, I'd say most Napa Valley wines were less than $20 back then. And an acre of Napa Valley grapes would cost you about $25,000. You know, 25, 30 years later, now that same acre is $400,000. And that same bottle of wine is $125 to $150. You know, that was the boomer generation. That's where most of the wealth is centered in the United States. But now we're rotating to a new consumer. In 10 years, the boomer generation, the last of the boomer generation, will hit full retirement, age of 66. And, you know, as these older consumers mature, even though they have money, now you start running into issues. You know, you consume less. You just can't drink like you did when you were younger. And it starts to interfere with medicines and other things. So older people don't drink as much. They probably drink very well because they have the wealth to do it. Now, that's juxtaposed to the millennial generation, which is at this point the largest generation in the U.S. Today. And they really don't participate in the wine business. It's too expensive. And when it comes to the marketing of it, we're still talking about long days, cool nights, pHs, soils, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous, and particularly with that latter point, that's an anathema to that young consumer. They don't trust people of wealth. They don't trust billionaires and millionaires and Wall Street. And so you can't sell with those things in mind. You have to talk about the natural components of the thing that you're selling. You have to talk about the fact it's gluten-free and that it's natural. You know, instead of spending all your time talking about the owner of the winery, that's not going to sell to that consumer. And they're looking for values, too. And so it's part of the reason why Oregon has done so well, because they're, you know, Oregon has you're not your parents' winery. Ah. It's a new discovered region for a lot of these young consumers. And B, you know, you don't find a lot of $125 to $150 bottles. So for a younger consumer, there's a lower entry point, and it's world-class wine. So the value for that young consumer is actually pretty good, and that explains the success today, I think, for Oregon largely.
I was going to ask you about where the generational differences of not wanting to drink dad's drink came in, but there it is. It sounds like that they're not really impressed by the older wineries. They like the funky new ones.
That's where they start, yeah. And my instinct and a couple of data points tell me that they're aspirational toward you know, wealth. Obviously, a lot of people, most people are. They would like to have more, you know, whether they actually get us into the question. But these younger consumers, from the data that I've seen, when they do buy wine, they're buying the most expensive bottles of all the cohorts. But it's only one bottle purchase or two bottles, versus maybe a boomer that might buy a case. So, you know, what you're really seeing is a young consumer who is buying a nice bottle of wine that is your parents' bottle. They're buying that for a gift or for a special celebration. And, you know, as a business, you really can't get along with having a consumer that only is an occasional drinker. If all consumers are only occasional drinkers, obviously the amount consumed is going to drop precipitously. And so, you know, that's what we have to do ahead for the industry, and we'll all have to make that change, including Oregon. Oregon's going to have to adapt the way they sell and market, because they still are selling to long days and cool nights, and to the extent that the one thing that they do better, I think, than other regions is they talk a lot more about sustainability, you know, natural components and things like that. That's probably a step that they have ahead of the other regions, and so maybe less room to change for Oregon than some of the others.
Rob McMillan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, founder and executive vice president of Silicon Valley Bank, which has a whole wine division, and he services 475 wineries across the country. He'll be delivering the keynote address at the Oregon Wine Symposium next week and has put out a report already, the State of the Wine Industry Report 2020. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments about the report. 800-838-3760 is our phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. To the market issues too. It's not just about price. It's also about choice, because you have millennials are going more for spirits or beer.
Yeah, you know, the spirit category is doing a much better job of marketing to values that the young consumer appreciates. First, second, you know, a serving of spirits is about half the cost of a serving of wine. That plays in for a frugal consumer. Can't underestimate that. But, you know, one of the things that another value for the younger consumer is fun. They, you know, it's, you know, go imagine, you know, they want to have fun. You know, the older consumers, you know, they thought, you know, a French dinner where you were served some nice food, you know, lettuce was something more than iceberg. You know, that was a good time for my generation. And, you know, this generation, you know, they're looking for fun, and so you see a lot of venues where alcohol is served now starting up, where, you know, you have a mixologist, and the mixologist, you know, he dazzles and amazes you, or he or she dazzles and amazes you. They, you know, may catch the drink on fire. They'll have this little group of botanicals in front of a mint or whatever, and they'll pick it off, and they'll drop it in, and they'll mash it, and they'll do all sorts of things to it, and it dazzles and amazes you, like I said, and that's entertainment. And you look at it and you go, wow, I can see these ingredients. I know what's in this drink, and knowing what's in food for the young consumers is really a critical thing. And again, back to the wine industry, even though we know what's in it, we don't talk about that. You know, it is actually, I mean, today, if you look at Wall Street, you know, Whataburger is a big deal on Wall Street, and a plant-based hamburger. Mm-hmm. It's not hamburger, obviously. It's plant-based thing.
A burger, anyway.
And, you know, wine is plant-based. You know, wine is from a certain area. It's got you know, a map to it that you can find. It's handcrafted. You know, many of the things that are important to the young consumers are in wine, but we're not talking about it, and we're letting the spirits category out market us in the way they're presenting to that young consumer.
So the artisanal aspect of it looms large. I want to talk about regionalism too, though. I mean, is there any particular attachment, like, you know, I buy my wine from Oregon because I live in Oregon, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, everybody in any given region, there's wineries in all 50 states. And I'll use Virginia as an example. I think they're four in terms of production size. And I remember years ago when I went up to Oregon, I was asking somebody, hey, you know, this is back in the 90s, you know, do you export? And, oh, yeah, we export. roughly 30%. Really, 30%? You're kidding me. That's a lot. And I said, where do you export to? Oh, California, Washington. You know, and so that's what happens in Virginia right now. The actual export that they have is zero when you look at what we think of as export to the rest of the world. But they're actually exporting, roughly 2-3% to other states. Mm-hmm. So each of the states have their own regional consumers, and each region is very proud of the kinds of wines that can be made. And so you do see that. And Oregon has been a provincial sort of a state for forever, and it's really only been the last 15 years that it started to gain national notoriety as some of the larger wineries, especially Jackson Family Wines, have come in kind of lifted the marketing veil presented the Oregon wine, especially Willamette Valley wine, to that consumer.
So the advantages, Rob, that you see the Oregon wine industry having in comparison certainly with California and Washington, do these have a fairly long tail? Do you see the advantages pretty much leveling off after 5 years, 10 years, something?
Yeah, Oregon is the nail that's sticking up, right? The rest of us, the regions have been pounded down now, and the regions recognize that. So at this point, you're going to start to see changes in the way that marketing and communication is done. I fully expect that. I'm working on several different projects to help the industry move toward that. It's very easy when you're riding high, as Oregon is right now, with very good results, to just say, that doesn't apply to me. But we're talking about a consumer change. We're talking about a national consumer change. We're talking about generational change. So it does apply, and inevitably, it's something that Oregon will have to deal with. It's very hard to deal with change when everything is going fine.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so you don't have to think about the future when the present is just so good.
Yeah, exactly, and that's where California's made a mistake. Is they, something I've been talking about for years, and things were fine, and so now that they're not, we're gonna do something about it. But hopefully, I can have this conversation with leadership in the Oregon wine industry, and maybe help them get ahead of the curve and not have the same experience that California's had.
Rob, we're down to our last half minute or so. I mean, do you think some people are going to bail from the business? Are we likely to see some vineyards turn into other crops over the years ahead?
I don't think so. Right now, the amount of planting that is out there in Oregon is reasonably close to being in balance. So I think Oregon is actually in an okay business. In California, in the last 15 years, we've pulled out close to 400,000 acres because of a changing consumer. But I don't think we're going to see the same thing in Oregon, as long as in the next 5 years there's not a lot of new planting that goes in the ground.
Okay, a lot to learn here, not just about paying attention to what's going on in the vineyard, but also where people are buying it and who those buyers are. Lots of lessons here. It's called the State of the Wine Industry Report 2020. It is compiled and organized by Rob McMillan, who's founder and executive vice president of Silicon Valley Bank. He'll be the keynote speaker at the Oregon Wine Symposium next week. Rob, very much appreciate the work on the report and your time spent with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hope people drop by the Oregon Wine Symposium next week.
Okay, thanks much. Bottom of the hour on the Jefferson Exchange, here's Marketplace Tech.